From the LifeWord studios, this is Life Perspectives with Michael Goring.
Joining me today is Christian apologist Alicia Wood. Alicia, thanks for being on the program.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here. Thank you so much for having me and looking forward to our conversation.
Well, I want to jump into the deep end here at the very beginning, all right? I want to talk about where is God in suffering? We oftentimes hear people, secular people, unbelievers say, if God is so good, why is there evil and suffering in the world? How would you respond to the argument that a good and loving God could not possibly allow suffering and evil to exist in the world?
Yeah, so I think it's actually two different questions. And I think the reason why it's two different questions is because I think the where is God in suffering is a unique answer to Christianity. So I think we've got the first one, right? The general, you know, how could God be good? How could he be powerful? How could he be loving? How could he be a father? All of these things and allow so many people to suffer and so many people to hurt and not do anything. And I understand that question. I mean, I think that, you know, we oftentimes put ourselves in the position of God and say, if I was there, I would stop it. You know, I would stop the suffering.
Yeah.
One of the challenges, though, you know, that I think we face when it comes to this question is we forget that we aren't all knowing. And the reason why I say that is because we have to understand that if we have to take into consideration, if we knew what God knew, then perhaps we wouldn't actually stop the suffering. So let me explain. If you know, let's say somebody was tragically killed in a house fire, let's say, okay, they're asleep and it's like, God, why would you let this happen? This is horrible. You know, you could have stopped it. True, could have stopped it, absolutely. But because we don't possess the all-encompassing knowledge that God has, we assume that the right thing in that situation would have been to stop the fire. However, if we did possess God's knowledge, then we might have been able to see to the next day. And then the next day, this innocent person would have just been driving and would have just, you know, maybe glanced down at their phone, glanced at the radio, whatever, and hit a family of four and killed them all, including themselves. So now you've got a situation in a car accident where both people in both cars all die. And it's one of those situations where it's like, well, God, we would have said, God, why would you let this happen? You could have stopped it. You could have stopped it. And I think that there's a sense in which, how do we know that the fire that the person died in the day before wasn't the means of stopping it? Like, in other words, I think that there's this sense that when we know a larger picture, it actually can make sense why God allows a particular bit of suffering. And I think we don't take a lot of that in mind. We just think if you stop this piece of suffering, then everything will go on just fine. But what we have to remember is any change we make to any particular situation changes all of the situations that followed.
Yeah.
Okay. You know, and so we
kind of a bit.
Yes. Yeah. You know, yeah. You know, and I think some of it's part of our individualistic Western mindset where we just think it's my life and what I do just impacts me, doesn't impact anybody else, but that's not true. Anytime you get in the car and drive on the road, your decisions impact tons of people around you that you'll never meet. And so I think that part of our struggle is that we forget that we actually don't know the future and that we actually don't know if God allowing this particular situation was actually to prevent a greater thing from happening. Now, that doesn't help us when we deal with something like cancer, right? When we deal with like somebody's ill and somebody's sick and some, you know, we're not dealing with any kind of, hey, some harm would have come the next day type situation. And I understand that because I think once again, we think that there's a certain level of unfairness or injustice with this. And, you know, when suffering, you know, 8-year-old gets cancer, it's much different than if a 9-year-old got cancer, right? With a 9-year-old, we say, well, they lived a good life. So we're actually okay, more so, not fully, I'm not saying 100% okay, but we have the ability to understand somebody at 90 getting cancer because we feel like they've gotten what they deserve by being able to live. And we feel like it's an injustice when the 8-year-old doesn't get the same.
Yeah.
And you know, where do we put that measurement? Because then it's like, okay, well, why do you have that view about the 90-year-old, but you should have that view about a 100-year-old or a 105-year-old? Like, where does the number stop where we say, okay, they lived a good life? Yeah. And so I think, you know, outside of our traditional, God allowing free will and free choice and people to do all kinds of things. I think that there's some of these other aspects that we don't really oftentimes consider or think about. And I think some of these things help me to understand the problem of suffering more, because I'm able to understand if God takes this one thing away, that will impact thousands of other people and situations. And we don't know how my going through suffering may actually be helping to eliminate somebody else from some suffering down the road, or just change a whole set of variables that needed to be changed. One quick thing on that is, you know, we always said the what's the famous little phrase, that only two sure things in life are death and taxes.
Yeah.
You know, and that's true. Every New Year's, I'm just like, oh yeah, Happy New Year's. All this means is tax season is now upon us, you know?
Yeah.
It's just one of those things, right? And so I think that, you know, we know that death is going to come. But we have a qualifier on it, that it's more fair for you to die if you've done something that we think is deserving of it.
Yeah.
Or if you've lived a certain amount of time that we feel like it's okay. But the reality is death at any age wasn't never part of God's design. Whether it's 90 or whether it's at 5, it was never part of God's design. So death in and of itself doesn't matter about this qualifier you put on about longevity has nothing to do with the fact that death in and of itself is not what God wanted.
Yeah.
And so that thing that is going to come is already a distortion or a moving away, I should say, of what God's original design and plan was.
Yeah, that's good. That is a great way to share the Christian faith with someone who's asking that tough and difficult question. We talk about the role of faith. How does the Christian faith offer hope to those suffering, particularly in moments when God's presence feels so distant? And at times, I mean, if we're honest, it does feel like God is either distant or silent in our lives. So how do we offer hope to those in those particular moments?
Yeah, I mean, the idea of God being silent, I think, is something that every Christian goes through. I would never say that I've never gone through that. The idea of God being silent is definitely part of my experience in my years of life. And you wonder, you know, are you there? Do you love me? Do you care? Where are you? I think you see that in the Psalms as well. You see that in the Bible. It's not like a modern day thing. I think you see that even amongst the people that were writing the very words that we read in the text. And I think this kind of gets a little bit to the where is God in suffering kind of aspect. Mm-hmm. Because I think what brings comfort to somebody in suffering is not only that, you know, the Christian worldview is very unique here, because in other worldviews, you know, so for example, Islam, they would say, you know, grieve, they would mourn over suffering, but what they wouldn't do is question God, because it's up to his will. It's his will. It's his plan. So there's no questioning of him because it's his plan, but they'd grieve. But Allah is distant. There's no guarantee even for the Muslim that they will even encounter Allah in paradise. Yeah. So there's this distance that is always there. He would never come to earth. He would never associate with us humans. And the opposite is true for Christianity. You know, Christianity talks about a God who comes to earth. When a Christian thinks of heaven, unlike maybe some of the more popular views of it, like, you know, got old men on clouds and harps and all this kind of silliness, what a Christian looks forward to is actually being with God for all of eternity, being and living with the greatest possible being for all of eternity. That is the best part about heaven, experiencing the goodness and the perfection and the love and the relationship and all of these things in the highest, most extreme, most perfect sense. That's what the Christian looks forward to. So you're talking about there's a connection with God in heaven and there's a connection with God on earth for the Christian, because God comes to us.
Yeah.
And he comes and he enters into that suffering, and he comes and he voluntarily chose to partake in that suffering. Why? Because of the fact that this is like when you love somebody, you sacrifice. And I just, you know, the California, the LA wildfires or fire that's destroyed a large chunk of LA, you know, is a recent thing for us. And I remember just reading just this morning about some of the people that died. One of the people that died was a father who chose to stay with his son who had cerebral palsy because he couldn't evacuate. And that father, who could have gotten out, chose to stay in that house with his child, to suffer with him and to die with him because he loved him.
Yeah.
And I think that when we understand God in that way, you know, people say, well, it's barbaric, God would send a son. We miss it. Yeah, God sends a son, but the son sends himself.
Mm-hmm.
And Jesus talks about that. He came to give his life as a ransom for many. And so he sends himself to come and to suffer along with us and to be rejected by friends, to go through pain, to experience torture, to experience, you know, nails being driven through your forearms and you know, your feet and people mocking you. And you've got, I mean, you're bleeding, you're suffocating, essentially dying on the cross. And then you've got friends who abandon you. I mean, you've got all these, imagine suffering and alone.
Yeah.
Right? It's not even like suffering with people, suffering alone. And you see that when we go through suffering, when we feel alone, when we feel like, God, where are you? Why don't you stop it? We recognize that there is a God who will be with us, who will walk with us, who isn't afraid to get dirty. But it is also a God who will allow the suffering. He allowed it with his son. Yeah. He's allowed it throughout the biblical text. And the way that the Christian endures it is they endure it because of that future hope,
yeah,
and guarantee that one day the suffering will end. So this isn't the whole story. My suffering, my pain is a chapter in my book. But my book continues when I leave this earth and I go into eternity. I have a friend, friends who sadly just lost their little baby boy, their little son, he was born with a particular condition, and we prayed for God to heal him, and he wasn't, he didn't heal him.
Yeah.
At least on this side of earth, and he healed him now. He's fully whole. He's fully healthy. He's fully well now. But this sweet little infant son who lived for about 2 days, you know, in just a short life, touched so many people's lives and impacted so many people. But, you know, at the funeral, both his parents shared, and they shared, well, his father shared a really beautiful, I guess you'd say, message about how he as a Christian deals and processes through the death of his son differently than an atheist. You know, for someone who has no God, my son is gone and I will never see him again.
Mm-hmm.
For someone who's a Christian, he's gone right now, but one day, as David, you know, once said, I can't go, or he can't come to me, but one day I will go to him.
Yes.
And one day, as that father said, he will go and he will see a son in heaven running to him saying, Daddy. And I think that that eternal perspective in during suffering is what helps the Christian endure, not because the pain is any less, not because the tears aren't any less real, but because we know that this isn't the end of the story and it will soon be over.
Yeah. So what advice, Alicia, would you give to someone struggling with deep emotional pain or grief while trying to maintain their faith in God? I mean, we live in a world, in a culture where it's almost at an epidemic level of depression, anxiety. What's the advice that you give to someone struggling with those deep emotional feelings while trying to maintain their faith, their relationship, their closeness with God?
Well, you're right. I mean, we are seeing the highest levels of mental health in America that we've ever seen.
Yeah.
And we are more privileged than we've ever been. We have heat when we're cold. We have AC when we're hot. We don't have to take cold showers. We can take warm showers. Any of you ever traveled to other parts of the world, you know what I'm talking about with cold showers. And, you know, we are privileged beyond belief. If you've got this illness, there's antibiotics, there's medication. And in spite of it all, we haven't found satisfaction. And a lot of it has to do with the fact that so much of our happiness, we measure in comparison to other people. And that's what you see through social media.
Yeah.
And a lot of those things. But either way, what we see ultimately is these people are happy. Why can't my life be as good as theirs?
Yeah.
And we would see this with Hollywood all the time, right? Why look at all this money they make, look at all the pretty people they get to date and be with, and all the movies they get to make, all the money and all the fun trips they get to do. And then you read that this one committed suicide, and this one committed suicide, or this one's suffering from depression, or this one, and you're like, if this is what brings the happiness, then why are these people not happy?
Yeah.
And we oftentimes, this becomes our standard though of judging happiness. So we think my life is bad because it's not as good as theirs, but we actually have no idea that those people are hurting too. Mm-hmm. And so what happens is we take on this expectation that somehow there's an injustice or a wrong done to us, that I can't be as happy. Like it's my right to be just as happy. It's like I should have what they have. And what happens is when we don't meet that standard, then we fall into despair and we get angry, right? Our grief turns to anger. It turns to anger at God. It turns to anger at this person or anger at this community or anger at this thing. And so what it's done, I think, is led so many people into an unrealistic view of what it's like to be human and to live life. For most of human civilization, well, all of human civilization, there's been suffering, all of it. And people had 8 kids because number one, they didn't know how many of those kids would live till 5. And they didn't know if mom would die in childbirth and you wouldn't have any more kids. You know, people were dying at much younger ages than they do now. Suffering was part of it. Hunger, disease, when they didn't have all the medications we have, it was all part of it. And now we've got this expectation that somehow I'm not supposed to hurt. Mm-hmm. And if I am, then God must not be there, or God is doing something wrong to me. And the reality of the situation is that when we strive so much to live a life that is pain-free, not only are we living an illusion or a delusion, but we also aren't teaching ourselves how to live when it hurts.
Yeah.
And that, I think, is what's foundationally missing from so many people today, is we as a culture don't know how to live in pain, how to thrive when it hurts. And so we fall apart much easier and quicker than other cultures have.
Yeah. And, you know, as I'm listening to you talk here, one of the common phrases that I hear as a pastor is, well, God won't give you more than what you can handle. And that's false. That's a lie.
It is. It's not in the Bible at all, actually.
No. It's a lie from the devil, I believe, because it makes us our own mini God almost, right? I mean, we're saying, well, that's right. I can do this. I can do this. When the Christian faith and the gospel says, you need to rely on Him. You need to cast all your cares on Him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. As we talk about engaging the culture with the gospel, I want to transition here as an apologist. How can Christians engage modern culture without compromising the truth of the gospel?
Well, first of all, I think Christians need to decide if Jesus is Lord of their life.
Yeah.
Because I'm seeing, and there's a lot of people who believe. There's a lot of people who, believe that Jesus lived and died, even rose from the dead. But even the demons believe that. That doesn't make you of any higher level than where the demons are. That's just believing history. But I think the challenge comes in making Him Lord of our life. In other words, does He impact our thoughts? Does He impact our words? Does He impact our actions? Do I rule my life and do what I want? Or do I submit my life to His Lordship and follow Him, even if it's uncomfortable? And the reason why I say that is because right now, I think Christians are sending a very confusing message to the non-Christian world. And you're not going to be really able to reach a non-Christian world if you aren't even portraying what real Christianity is. Brennan Manning, the author and theologian, pastor, once said that the greatest single cause of atheism today are Christians who acknowledge Jesus with their lips and walk out the door and deny Him with their lifestyle.
Yeah.
That is what an unbelieving world simply finds unbelievable. And so I think number one, we as Christians need to decide, are we going to live in the way that God desires me to live, even though it may cost me something, even though it make me uncomfortable, even though I can't fulfill all my desires, even though I can't say what I want and do what I want, I got to give up things. Because if you're not willing to do that, your effectiveness in reaching the culture is going to be significantly, it's going to be nothing really, because there's nothing about you that's going to be unique, different, that people will covet or want. But if we decide that Jesus Christ is Lord, then we immediately are going to be a light in darkness. And what I would encourage people to do is to be that light in darkness, not just in your Christian circles, but with non-Christians.
Yeah.
You need to have non-Christian friends. I don't think there is enough of enough interaction oftentimes between Christians and non-Christian friends. How many Buddhist friends do you have? How many atheist friends do you have? How many Muslim friends do you have? How many whatever? And so, because what I find is that just like any relationship, Christian, non-Christian, whatever, as you go through life, you talk about a variety of things. You talk about a variety of things that pertain to your life. How should we think about this? What happened? These are normal things that come up in conversation, and you need to have a range of people so that when they have questions, they can come to you and they can talk to you. And so I think one of the ways that we can be connected with culture is making sure that we truly have made Jesus Christ as Lord of our life. And if you haven't made him Lord of your life, then I think you need to really question whether or not you really truly are a follower of Jesus Christ. Because I think it's the Bible makes it clear that it's not just believe, it's believing in your heart Jesus Christ is Lord and that God raised him from the dead. Yeah. But I think the second thing too is be aware of the issues that are going on. There's so many issues right now that are going on, and they seem so far away to so many Christians, primarily because the idea seems so far away, or like, we're like, we don't even know what to think about that, but you need to do the work, because this is what people, your colleagues, your coworkers, your neighbors, they're dealing with all this stuff too. We need to be talking about the major cultural issues in churches. We need to be talking about the major cultural issues in youth groups, because people in churches and youth groups are dealing with so many of these topics and so many of these things. And they, unless they get wisdom from somebody, they're going to come up with their own wisdom, and it isn't always good. So I think we need to be willing to engage with the variety of things that are happening in our culture. And don't get married. Whatever you do, don't get married to politics.
Yeah.
As my friend once said, Jesus Christ is not American. Okay. He's not Republican or Democrat. He's not American. He's from the Middle East, and he's got a larger kingdom perspective.
Yeah.
And I think I think we need to be careful that we never create any other lords for ourselves, but the one that died for us.
Yeah, that's good advice. As we wrap up today, in a world filled with confusion, division, hopelessness, and part of that is politics, the divisionists, how can the message of the gospel speak into the pain and disillusionment of people and what they feel today?
So how can they connect with them when they feel so much despair?
Yeah.
Well, I think number one, if you've gone through in any moment of disillusion, despair, sadness, I think you can immediately connect because you know what somebody else has been through.
Yeah.
And I think that connecting point is really important. You know, if somebody has cancer, they find so much comfort in talking with somebody else who has cancer or a cancer survivor because they know what it's like to go through it all, to lose your hair and what it might be. So I think if that is part of your story, I think you use it. You use what you've gone through. You use your stories, use your life, use what you've overcome to connect with people. And I think we have a very unique message of hope. Much of the despair and the delusion that's going on in our culture is because we're confused. Mm. It's a culture of confusion.
Yeah.
And so what we're looking for is, how do I know who I am? How do I know what's real? How do I know what's true? How do I know who to love? How do I know what's morally right or what's morally wrong? How do I know who to hate? There's just so much confusion, and people are looking for answers. And I think what we have in the biblical text are answers to so many of the questions that people are raising very today in the culture. And so I think we actually need to be speaking truth into it. We need to bring clarity when there's confusion. We need to bring an semblance of light when people feel like they're shrouded in darkness. And I think we've got a truth to share. And I think that that's an important avenue for us to take.
And an important resource that our viewers can tap into as they try to navigate these tough questions and these things that are maybe seem overwhelming intellectually, and how do we engage with those who may be asking questions to believers. A great resource is the organization that you're a part of, AliciaApologetics.org, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And what kind of resources can people find there?
Yeah, sure. No, thanks for asking that, because apologetics.org is a super easy to remember website, and there's a plethora of resources. So you've got articles. We write articles on a range of topics that pertain to today. So even, I've got an article up there on, is it good to say Jesus is the only way? I have another article up there on intersex. What really is intersex, which is the I of LGBTQIA. There was a big issue in the Olympics in Paris about a boxer, Imani Khalif, and Imani trans, and all these kind of different situations. So I deal with the intersex topic there. So you got a list of articles on our website written by me and also other speakers. And so we've got Matthew Middleburg, we have Megan Allman, we've got Mike Sherrard, and both Matthew and Mike have podcasts. So you can also check out their podcast. Matthew has a YouTube channel, and you can check out his YouTube and his videos on a lot of popular questions. And then I just recently started a podcast called Hey Alicia. It's easy to find on Apple and Spotify, and you can, it's much more of like people asking me questions, and I will answer those questions. It's also questions that I get from the stage that maybe I thought would be good to address. And also people can respond back to some of the questions that I've answered or respond back to the answers that I've given and share some of their thoughts. So if you're interested in that, just, you can go to the Hey Alicia podcast and go to apologetics.org to submit your questions to the Hey Alicia podcast. So there's a range of resources out there. And I really encourage people, like, we don't spend all this time writing this stuff and speaking on these issues and thinking through these issues just because we need to better understand them. Right. I don't feel like I'm in that position where I need to better understand, really any of the cultural ones out there, because I feel like I've already looked through so many of them. But we do this to help other people. We do this to help Christians who are trying to sort through, where is my faith in all of this? And we do it to help non-Christians, right? If you're feeling like you're confused, if you're feeling like you don't know, what is true? There's so many religions, there's so many gods, there's so many, like, you're just like, I don't know. Like, this is why we have this resource. Write me questions into Hey Alicia as a non-Christian. I want that. I want people to write that in from other faiths. And we can talk about these kind of things. So please take advantage of the resources that are there, because they're really there for you. That's why we do them.
Yeah. Alicia Wood, thank you so much for taking the time today to talk about these important topics of faith and apologetics. If you are interested in learning more about Alicia's ministry and getting those resources, visit apologetics.org. I'm Michael Goring, and this has been Life Perspectives. Thanks for watching.